Good news, bad news day in Denver today. Good news, Ryan O'Reilly, if you're an Avs fan, got a two-year deal, avoided arbitration. Bad news, one of the best owners in the NFL, also an Edmontonian, grew up here, Pat Bowlen, had to step aside, relinquished his duties as the owner of the Denver Broncos, unfortunately, due to dealing with Alzheimer's. So that's... He just gave up control of it. That's very disappointing. To talk about both stories from ESPN in Denver, Colorado, we are joined once again by Drew Spivak. Drew, definitely a bittersweet day in that community. Let's start, first of all, with the Edmontonian, Pat Bowlen. I was reading online all the stories. Like, this guy was revered by the fans. A lot of times some of the owners in those leagues or other leagues will get ripped on. Why was he so beloved in Denver?
Yeah, you know, Pat Bowlen's one of those guys that he's been around here for so long in Denver. He's been the owner of the Broncos since 1984. He was the owner with five out of the Super Bowls that the Denver Broncos have been to. And he's just one of those guys that people love and respect because they know that, you know, this being a Denver Broncos town through and through, they know that Pat Bowlen is a guy that wanted to win every single year and that anything less than a Super Bowl victory was an epic failure. I think fans just gravitated towards that and just loved him and respected him because he would do whatever it took to put a winning product on the field. And whenever, you know, the Denver Broncos have been down for just, you know, a couple of years, it doesn't last very long because they know that Pat Bowlen is going to go out and make the changes necessary, like we saw after the Josh McDaniels era, bringing in a guy like John Elway. And he's going to do whatever it takes to win. So people just love and adore him out here. And they kind of wish that he was the owner of the rest of the teams in town here because of all the affairs we've seen with the baseball team and the basketball team out here. So it's a sad day in Denver. You hear a lot of people coming out just kind of showing their respect to him and just show how much he was loved and respected in this city.
Yeah, Drew, the unfortunate thing is, sadly, we all know this probably isn't going to get better. So when he steps away to deal with this, essentially he's reached the point where he's stepping away for good. What happens next in terms of control of the team? John Elway's there. I know Joe Ellis officially assumes control. What happens with the franchise now, though, until one day maybe some of the Bowlen family can take over? I think that's the long-term plan.
Yeah, that is at least it sounds like that's going to be the long-term plan. Basically kind of how it's working out is about a decade ago, there was a trust put together. It's kind of like the Bowlen Family Trust. And they basically put this in place just in case something like this were to happen one day. But ever since John Elway has come in and assumed the role of, you know, the vice president of player personnel or whatnot, he's basically kind of just been the guy in charge as far as what happens with the personnel and all that kind of on-field activities. And Joe Ellis has been the guy that's basically run the day-to-day operations as far as the non-football side of things. So I think we're going to see that pretty much stay the same until one of Bowlen's seven kids does eventually take the reins of it. You know, it was funny, John Elway actually asked in his press conference today whether or not he would be interested in owning the Broncos because I think that seems to be the logical next step for him is to become the owner of this team. But he flat out said, you know what, this is a team that it is owned by the Bowlen family, period, no doubt about it. But John Elway's a guy that he's worked for Pat Bowlen for 20-some years now, and that doesn't seem to be changing at all. So we all kind of had a feeling this was going to eventually happened. We kind of thought it was going to come sooner than later based on the lesser role that Pat Bowlen has taken on in the past couple of years. So it wasn't an entirely unexpected move, but still just a sad, sad thing for a guy that's so well respected in this city.
Drew Spivak joins us, ESPN in Denver. Obviously a huge loss for that organization. They're obviously still very good on the field. Then we turn over to the hockey team and this negotiations, we saw this before with O'Reilly and his camp. They ended up accepting an offer sheet from the Flames, and that allowed them to get the contract signed. This time I went right down to the wire, avoided arbitration a few hours beforehand. Was it an acrimonious negotiation at all, or is it just one where two sides disagreed and finally realized that they didn't want to get into a kind of a throwing dirt on one another type of situation that happens in arbitration?
Yeah, I think that's basically what happened. Joe Sakic said that he got in from Lake Tahoe a couple days ago, and he really started to kind of break things down with Greg Sherman, the guy who kind of handles the salary cap type issues for the Avalanche, and he got into it with him and just said, hey, you know, let's get something worked out. And then apparently what happened today is right as they were getting ready to go into the arbitration room, two sides sat there and talked and said, you know what, let's come to agreement. Let's meet in the middle and let's lock this thing up for 2 years and then we'll figure out the rest later on instead of basically sitting there and sling and mud at each other in an arbitration room, because we know that could have been really just the death nail in this entire relationship if it would have gotten to that point. And I think it was a huge shock for everybody here in town that it did get here, because everything we heard is that the negotiations weren't going anywhere. They saw the two sides were so far apart on what the monetary number was going to be that there was no way they were going to be able to work this thing out, without an arbitrator doing it. So it was really nice to see that the two sides finally said, you know what, let's just skip the arbitrator, let's work this out between ourselves. And it was nice to say that they met in the middle as well. Both sides appear to be very happy with where things are at with it right now. So it's a good thing going forward. Now, the nice thing with it as well is the fact that we don't have to worry about this again now for 2 years until O'Reilly becomes an unrestricted free agent. And then, well, we'll see what happens at that point.
Drew, I know they're playing nice now, and I understand what you're saying. Whenever a deal gets done, you're not going to come out and say, well, we're unhappy with it, because you just put your name to it. But it seems to me there's some honest somewhere. There's some bad feelings here. I don't know if it goes back to the offer sheet or the sense that he was overpaid because of that. Because, you know, when you come in and you're offering the maximum pay cut allowable, that's not a great opening salvo for negotiations either. Am I reading between the lines too much here, or is there something going on in the background?
You know, honestly, it's really hard to say. Now, I think the only people that really know, honestly, the true situation with it is Ryan O'Reilly and his camp, and obviously the Avalanche side of things. I think the general consensus around the city here is that, you know, there has to be some sort of animosity based on the fact that, you know, once the lockout season wrapped up and O'Reilly had signed a contract to play overseas, and then they couldn't get the deal worked out for that first time, that kind of created a little bit of animosity. And, you know, we've heard all sorts of rumors that maybe O'Reilly was upset that he wasn't given the captainship once Adam Foote left the team and it was given to Gabriel Landeskog instead. I mean, there's no real foundation to those rumors. It's just one of those things you hear about all the time. But, I find it hard to believe that there isn't a little bit of animosity, especially with the way that this has played out so much in the public and in the media and things like that. But, you know, they're all saying the right things, and Joe Sack continues to say, hey, we want to work towards a long-term deal. And I think this whole thing, the way it played out today as far as meeting in the middle and getting this thing worked out, I think it goes to mending some of the bridges, if not most of them, that were maybe burned throughout this negotiation the last couple of years.
Looking ahead, Matt Duchesne's locked up at $6 million through the 2018-19 season. You've got, other than, of course, their young superstar, Nathan MacKinnon, whose contract ends with the Ryan O'Reilly, you know, they don't have any big contracts coming up, at least, right away. Jan Hayda, I'm not sure how serious of a negotiation that would be just based on his age. But overall now, the Avs seem to be in, at least for a few years, not having to worry about losing any of their guys via free agency or contract squabbles.
Yeah, I think so. At least for the next 2 years, everything should be pretty well set, which I think was kind of the big worry with everybody, especially with this going into arbitration as well. Yeah, we get the one-year deal with O'Reilly, but then we got to worry about this again next summer. And that's the nice thing now, is that at least for the next 2 years, everything seems to be locked up and in order, and the Avalanche know pretty much the team that they're going to go forward with for the next two seasons. But like you said, it's going to get interesting again in the next 2 years. Once O'Reilly becomes an unrestricted free agent, like you said, Nathan MacKinnon, he's going to be a free agent. I believe Eric Johnson will also be a free agent. So there's a couple of those core guys there that still need to be locked up. Now, I know the nice thing with MacKinnon, at least, is that he's restricted, so that kind of helps the Avalanche a little bit more there. But it's nice to know that the fact that they've got, you know, Matt Duchesne locked up for a while, they've got Gabriel Landeskog, you got Semyon Varlamov locked up, so you've got kind of your key core guys locked up for a while. So now it's just kind of see, well, what do they do now with Tyson Barrie? They can only give him a little bit under $3 million to fit underneath the salary cap, because he's also a restricted free agent, but I don't think there will be any issue as far as getting that done. So it's definitely a good sign that the Avalanche have a lot of guys locked up for the coming years.
Well, and I guess the thing is going to be timing. When you're close to the cap, we've got to see what the cap is a year and 2 years from now, when some of those potentially bigger deals need to be renewed. Right now, it looks like they're in pretty good shape.
Yeah, there's no question. And I mean, I know a lot of us thought that the cap was going to go up a couple million this year. It turns out it didn't go up as high as a lot of us thought that it was going to. But that's really going to be interesting, you know, in 2 years, especially with Nathan MacKinnon, because if he comes out and he has another, you know, spectacular year this year, then the following year, he's going to get paid some big-time bucks. So it's really going to be fun to watch and how this plays out. I think if you're the Avalanche, you got to sit there and hope that the salary cap is going to go up fairly significantly in the next couple of years. Otherwise, you could be looking to losing some of these core guys that you may not want to.
One last one, quickly going back to the Broncos. They've made some changes offensively. Obviously, everybody knows what happened in the Super Bowl, one of the more embarrassing losses in a long time. Super Bowl a bust again for the Broncos. I'm assuming that's the calling card for them. But what changes do you think they need to make? Or was that just a one game off? Or were there bigger issues offensively for this team?
You know, I'm not so sure if it was so much offensively last year. I mean, I think the biggest thing when we watched that Super Bowl is that Seattle just came out and completely stunned them and hit them in the mouth. And I think it really shocked the Broncos just how physical Seattle came out to be. But I think they made the necessary changes. I think you're going to come out this year and you're going to see a little bit of a different offense. I think you may even see a more balanced offense. Monte Ball looks like he's going to be the featured ball carrier for them this year as opposed to Knowshon Moreno. And he could be a guy that could get, you know, maybe 1,200, 1,300 yards in this system. And you could still see Peyton Manning throw for 5,000 yards and have a really great year for the Broncos. But I think the biggest thing when you look at it is defensively. The Broncos had to get tougher defensively. They go out, they bring in DeMarcus Ware, they get Aqib Talib, they get T.J. Ward. So they really got better, I think, defensively, and that's going to be the key thing. And the nice thing as well is they're getting Von Miller back. Now, Von Miller can go out and he can stay out of trouble off the field. I think the Broncos' defense is going to be in really good shape, but I'm still not completely convinced that they're a better team than Seattle or San Francisco. I think those are still kind of the benchmarks in the league right now, and it's going to be tough to get through them. But I don't see any reason why Denver shouldn't be the team coming out of the AFC once again this season.
We appreciate the rundown. Drew, thanks for your time.
Hey, absolutely, guys. Anytime.